I'm Gabby. He's a very tan Jules back in London. Took the sun with you because there's blue skies over West London. Thanks for being here. We have a packed show today, Jules. As you know, World Cup qualifying, Arteta and Conte, World Cup every 2 years. Frank Ribery's new team. Plenty to talk about.
Yeah.
But there's one place to start. Brazil versus Argentina. This is a qualifying game for the World Cup. Game kicks off after, what, 5-6 minutes? It gets abandoned. Guys in suits come onto the pitch. Cops come onto the pitch. Game called off. Now, Gustavo Hoffman was there. He's with ESPN. He's going to fill us in more details. But in case you don't know the backstory to this, it has to do with COVID, unsurprisingly. So basically, Brazil also has a list, a so-called red list of countries, where if you come into the country, you have to quarantine from 10 days if you come in the country, and if you've been in one of those countries for the previous 14 days. Yeah. On that red list, along with the likes of India and South Africa, is the United Kingdom. Yeah. That rule, by the way, doesn't apply to Brazilian nationals because, of course, as we know, viruses check passports before they infect people. Anyway, Argentina came to play. Now, Argentina has four players who were in the Premier League: Emiliano Buendia, Emiliano Martinez, Romero, and Lo Celso from Spurs, the first two for Villa. When they came into the country, they, or most likely a servant for the Argentine FA, filled in a form for them and didn't mention that they had been in the United Kingdom in the previous 10 days. As Brazilian media put it, they lied. I don't quite think it was a lie, because some
everybody
kind of
knew, right?
They're Premier League players. People saw them. Yeah. People know who they are, right? As a result of this, the Brazilian Sanitary Surveillance Authority decided that they needed to get to them, to either deport them or to quarantine them.
Yeah.
There is some dispute about when they found out, how early. Gustavo's going to have more information for us. It was as early as Saturday. Long story short, they couldn't get to them. They could only get to them once they were in the stadium, so they say, and after the game had kicked off, they came onto the pitch. Now, Argentina say, hang on a minute. We have a COVID protocol that was agreed for the Copa America, agreed among Mercosur nations. These guys aren't normal travelers. There was an exemption for them. They're traveling in a bubble. They were tested every day. We thought that that applied to this situation.
Yeah.
Early reports suggest that CONMEBOL backed them, as well as the Brazilian FA. But evidently, the Brazilian health authorities thought different. Gustavo, you know far more than I do. Is that a fair assessment, more or less, of what happened?
Yes. No, it's fine. It's fine. It's very good. Hello, everyone. It's a pleasure to be here. Well, it was a shame. It was a shame for everybody who was in the stadium, for everybody who was watching the match on the world, because that's a Brazil and Argentina match, one of the major classics in the football or soccer. I don't know. you decide. But you know, everything that happened, it could be prevented. It could be prevented because on Saturday, when we published the information, everybody knew about the situation, about the irregular situation of the four Argentine players. So I think that there is a mistake. There's one. Everything began with the four Argentinian players when they didn't tell the truth, when they didn't match the correct answers like that when they were admitted in Brazil.
So, sorry, Gustavo. The first obvious question is: if we knew on Saturday that this was the situation, what action took place on Saturday? Why didn't they go and speak to them on Saturday? Or maybe did they try to speak to them? Did they speak to the Brazilian FA and CONMEBOL and say, hey, we have a problem here?
Political decisions, because I was in the Argentina's hotel when everything began on Saturday afternoon, because I was in the hotel, in the reception of the hotel, when the authorities, the health authorities from Brazil arrived, and they started the meeting with AFA, with CBF, and with CONMEBOL. And the meeting lasted more than 4 hours. And when they left the meeting, nobody wanted to talk, but we had the information that there was an agreement between everybody to let the players play. But on Sunday, around 12:40 p.m., a little bit more than 3 hours to the match, Anvisa, the sanitary surveillance authorities from Brazil, they published an info telling that, affirming that the four players were irregular here in Brazil and that they couldn't make any activity in Brazilian territory. So on Saturday night, everybody knew. They tried to solve it with an agreement. On Sunday, a little bit more than 3 hours before the match, they knew, they published the information, and everybody knew where the Argentinian team was. Everybody knew what they would do. So that's a kind of unbelievable that no one made the right decision before the match.
The way this has been reported around the world is it's almost like some people said, oh, Anvisa tried to find them, they couldn't get to them and stuff, they had no choice but to show up and get them at the game. No, they knew beforehand. They knew 24 hours earlier at the Brazilian, at the Argentina team hotel. They sat down. A normal person would say, okay, let's reach an agreement of how we're going to handle this, and then we all stick to the agreement. What happened?
Yeah, I really don't buy the version sold by Anvisa, by the Brazilian authorities, that they couldn't reach the Argentinian players. You know, this is unbelievable, because here in Brazil, we have the federal police. The federal police can reach any person they want, anytime. We see these kind of things, these kind of actions, every day, with politicians, with criminals, with anyone, you know, and they can't reach a football team. It's unbelievable.
But they did reach them on Saturday, right? Because on Saturday,
exactly,
they spoke to them. How did that meeting end?
On Saturday, around between 2 and 3 p.m. In the Argentina hotel, some people from the health authorities arrived in the reception. I was there. It was in front of me. They called AFA, the Argentina FA. They called CONMEBOL. People from AFA and CONMEBOL went to this meeting that began in the reception. Around 1 hour, more people were arriving. They're talking about it. I was there, right beside them. And then they decided to go to a special room to keep on talking. And this last...
At this point, they didn't invite you into the room, yeah?
No, they didn't invite me. Yeah.
They didn't need a translator,
and, you know, Yeah, and you know, a funny story. I was with a ESPN T-shirt with from Sports Center, and it was ta-na-na, ta-na-na in the T-shirt. and then when they left the meeting after 4 hours, we had the info that there was an agreement between AFA had the information that there was an agreement that they could use the four players. But Anvisa didn't mention anything, didn't say anything officially. And then on Sunday, they published the official info a little bit more than 3 hours before the match, saying very clearly that the four Argentinian players couldn't make any activity in Brazil, and that they informed the federal police to act.
Okay, so this is the first thing that we don't know, right? Because there's mysteries to say FIFA ultimately are the ones who are going to have to resolve this. The Argentina FA, and I was told CONMEBOL too, after their meeting with Anvisa, they say that we reached an agreement and Anvisa said, okay, you can play. Anvisa didn't say anything, so presumably Anvisa would dispute that and say, no, we never gave you permission to play, which is why the next day, 3 hours before the match, they published that information reminding them that they had to quarantine. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct.
And so we're going to have to find out. Both versions can't be true. So one of those two is a little bit Pinocchio here, yeah? With a long nose.
Yes. And we're also going to discover some political decisions, because they were trying to solve it. Everyone, parts from CONMEBOL, from AFA, from CBF, because CBF, the Brazilian FA, on Sunday, they published an info also after the match that, oh, we had nothing to do with that. We didn't know exactly what was going on. No, that's not the truth, because people from Brazilian FA also were on the Argentina hotel on Saturday. So every part knew, all the parts knew what was happening, and they were trying to solve it. They're trying to make something work in the last hours. And then when Sunday arrived, when everything began with the Anvisa, the surveillance, sanitary surveillance from Brazil, when they published it, everybody started to say, oh, and now what's going to happen? And I also had the information that 30 minutes before the match, the federal police arrived in the stadium. And then it happened another meeting between federal police, people from the match, from CONMEBOL, and there they decided to take the players after the match. But then, that's a mess, that's a huge mess. But then Anvisa, the sanitary surveillance from Brazil, arrived and they said, no, the match must not start. The players cannot be in Brazil, they must be deported. It was around 5 minutes before the players go in the field. And then they started to talk everybody in the tunnels of Arena Corinthians. They didn't reach an agreement. The match began, and 4 minutes later, one person from Anvisa got in the field.
I mean, this is a mess, but we knew this was going to happen. One, it's a mess from the beginning. Some Brazilian players cannot travel. You know, the English clubs don't let them travel. There's no exemption. It's a mess because
let's be clear on this. Every Brazilian player, every South American player could travel. Some Brazilian players and some South American players said, the club said, no, we don't want you to go. That's all they can do is say, we don't want you to go. Nobody was forced to stay here. It was simply because players, like a lot of Brazilian players, said, if I come back, I have to spend a 10-day hotel quarantine here in the UK.
But so that's a mess in itself.
Yeah, of course.
It should not happen.
But
and the thing is now, it's no one's fault. Argentina.
Because if there's one
good moment for Argentina to play Brazil, it's yesterday. It's not a full Brazil squad. There's no one in the stadium. You haven't lost in 2 years. You've just won the Copa America. You want to play that game. So it's not in your interest, if you're Argentina, to not say where your players are coming from, etc.
You make a good point about some of the conspiracies and some of the backgrounds and self-interest here. In the reality, both these teams will qualify for the World Cup. They're both doing well.
Yeah, of course.
But let's take a step back, because I want to understand something here from Anvisa's perspective. Because it seems to me that there's two different things, right? There is the health risk posed by these players because they've been in the UK in the previous 14 days. And there is the fact that the information was misrepresented on the documents that they filed. To be clear, did Anvisa give any indication saying we're deporting them because they put down the wrong information, or we're deporting them because they pose a health risk?
Because of the wrong information, it's the first, it's a tough word, but it's a crime, you know?
Yes.
So the first crime committed by them, by the federal law of Brazil, was the wrong information. This is the first crime. And then Anvisa also says that there was a second crime because they couldn't leave the hotel. That Anvisa asked them not to leave the hotel, and then they left.
And they went to the game.
So this was a second crime.
So if those four players had not traveled from the hotel to the Corinthians stadium to play, and let's say they would have stayed in the hotel and instead, you know, I don't know, they would have started with three different players.
Yeah, three different Argentine players.
The games would have happened normally.
Yes, the game would happen normally because they would answer for what they had done.
Yeah.
But the game would happen, no doubt about it.
Then it's crazy in a way then from Argentina not to take that in consideration, because they have enough players to not play Lo Celso. And
that's a really, really important point. The fact that Argentina at that stage had the option to leave these guys in the hotel and go and play the game normally.
Yeah.
And one thing that I saw in front of my eyes on Saturday, when the meeting was happening, a person from CONMEBOL reached a person from AFA and said, don't take the players to the training. Because on Saturday, 6 p.m. Brazilian time, when the meeting was happening, Argentina had a training at Arena Corinthians, the match day minus one. And Comebol, one person from Comebol, told to the AFA guy, don't take the players. And they took the players. They decided to take the players. So on Sunday, if the players hadn't left the hotel, yes, the match would happen. But we also had the information on Sunday, when everything began with Anvisa, that if the four players weren't allowed to play, the Argentina team wouldn't go to the stadium.
Yeah, that is a really important point. That is another element to this.
Yeah.
Now, from the Argentina's perspective, what they say, what I've been told, is there is a rule here that applies to qualifying, which is the nation that's hosting a game is responsible for giving all the information that is necessary to the visiting team in terms of visas, obligations, quarantines, and so on. So in this case, the Brazilian FA,
yeah,
it is their responsibility to check with the government and give all the information that the visiting FA, Argentina, okay, need. According to the Argentina FA, they argued, and correct me again if I'm wrong, this is the information I have, is that this is governed by the same rules that existed for the Copa America, that an agreement was made among Mercosur nations for elite athlete exemptions, exactly like we have in Europe,
yeah,
and that, you know, they're not normal travelers. They're in a bubble, they have daily tests and so on. And that same rules that applied for the Copa America would apply here. So obviously, I look at this, Gustavo, and if this is correct, it seems to me that there's some lack of communication between the Brazilian FA and the Brazilian government.
Yeah, actually, there was one change from Copa America to now. One federal change, because there is a new interministerial decision published on 21st, July 21st, that decides that travelers from Britain, India, South Africa cannot go to Brazil if they don't quarantine for 14 days. So the chain is, the main chain is this one. Mm. That's a new decision from the government. So,
and so it's up to the Brazilian FA to be informed about this and to communicate.
They told AFA.
They did tell AFA.
They must have.
Officially. And we have the communication made by CBF for AFA, for AFA. There's a letter, an official letter, telling AFA about this decision. In the letter, they don't say specifically what the government decision is. They say there is this decision of the government number XXX from this date. So I'm not sure if people from AFA checked what was this decision. But the communication between CBF and AFA, because it's the responsibility from CBF, tells the other government, the other FA, it was made. It was really made. That's an official information.
Okay, but beyond the official information, you know, I can cite you, well, in observance of law 27.2, paragraph 3, subsection 2.
Exactly, yeah.
But also, if I'm Comebol, if I'm Alejandro Dominguez, if I'm the Brazilian FA, if I'm the Brazilian government, frankly, this is a big deal. I have an interest in avoiding an embarrassment like this. Might I not follow up with a WhatsApp or something? Hey, guys, you understand that these four players, they can't come into Brazil and play in this game unless they're going to quarantine, in which case they don't play the game. I mean, it seems like common sense that nobody would have thought to do this beforehand. As well as, and I'm also putting blame on the Argentine FA here, obviously, because at the very least, when they receive a document, they say, oh, what does this law say?
Exactly.
You know, blame is all around here.
And you tell Scaloni.
Does it make sense to you?
Yes, it makes sense for me. Yes, I agree with you, because I think that for Copa America, they make everything correct. But now, They didn't do that for the qualifiers. You know, when you have such kind of agreement like this one for CONMEBOL, for you to have to host an international match here in Brazil during this pandemic situation, Brazil isn't in a good situation. So when you decide to take this match here to host this kind of match, you have to make an agreement with every part.
Of course.
And it seems that they didn't do that, because yesterday, when the president of Anvisa was giving us an interview in Argentina, he said, no, I didn't talk to CONMEBOL. I never talked to CONMEBOL. Maybe the Brazilian government, but me, Anvisa, we didn't talk to CONMEBOL. But man, how can you talk to CONMEBOL if the Brazilian government said that it is okay, if CBF says that it is okay? So they didn't do the right thing.
Do you know what they sound like?
Lack of communication. I mean, communication is key in those things. Come on.
You know what this feels like a little bit? And Anvisa may be right based on the letter of the law, but it also looks like the typical bureaucrat who wants to go and hold you up and then wants to run out onto the pitch on television and say, everybody stop. Because this is completely unnecessary. You could have preserved the health, the security of people in Brazil. You could have enforced the law, and you could have done this in a much clearer way. And I also want to take issue here. I'm sorry. I'm putting blame on everybody here.
Yes.
I'm putting blame on CONMEBOL, too.
Of course.
Because CONMEBOL, I think in South America, it's exactly like in Europe, right? CONMEBOL say, oh, it's a FIFA competition, right? No. CONMEBOL, you sell the television rights to these games. You are organizing the South American portion of World Cup qualifying. I know for a fact there are people at CONMEBOL who are from Brazil. I know this 100%, right? Brazil's a big country. And I know they read newspapers and internet, whatever. Surely they would have, the fact that nobody would have noticed the rules, nobody would have gone ahead and said, guys, don't do this. This is dangerous. And these are crazy bureaucrats, and they have the law on their side.
So easily avoidable. So easily avoidable.
I think CONMEBOL says, oh, no, let's go ahead. And because that's what Argentina says, that once they're there, they do what CONMEBOL says. And CONMEBOL keeps saying, oh, let's go ahead. I mean,
yeah, but because for CONMEBOL, you could not, that game had to be played. This is the biggest game. There was like 200 countries in the world ready to watch the game.
Precisely because the game has to be played and there's a global pandemic, you make sure everything is correct.
Yeah, you help
the FAs.
You could see why they keep saying, go ahead. But you can't do that if you're not certain that the game will go ahead. Because what's going to happen now? You can't give the game lost to Argentina. You can't give the game lost to Brazil, because I think we will all agree that it's neither really their fault. You could have said, Scaloni, don't pick those four players, or at least they played Venezuela, they played the next game, but they don't play in Brazil. Okay, maybe, but it's still not their fault. They were told they can play the game.
Yeah, I mean,
so what do you do? 0 point for no one?
Well, this is the thing. So in terms of the next step, CONMEBOL, I noticed when they finally did tweet about this, sort of their second tweet was like, this is now FIFA's responsibility. Okay, one. Okay. So I'm looking at this, and there's two elements. One is, like you said, what do you do about this game? Can you make up this game in the calendar?
You can't reschedule it.
I think
there's no
the
time.
Answer is no, because the calendar is super tight.
Yeah.
Because, again, a reminder, CONMEBOL qualifying is 18 matches. It goes on forever.
Yeah.
We already have a triple header in this break because they decided, you know, not to consider Copa America for qualifying. They decided to go ahead with the Copa America. I think they had valid reasons to go ahead with the Copa America, by the way. I'm not blaming them for that.
But they could not play the qualifiers back in...
But the qualifiers before, I think that was one where they should have come up with a better solution rather than leaving them zero margin. So do you agree, first of all, that the game cannot be rescheduled?
Yes, it's kind of possible because of the calendar. But the correct decision would be to play again, because it's right there. It's not Argentina has the fault because of what was made when they got in Brazil, when they were admitted in Brazil. But then everything that happened after that, it was not Argentina's fault, was not Brazil's FA fault. So how are you gonna solve it?
So
it should be played again, but it's impossible.
So if it's impossible,
play just with players who play in Brazil and players who play in Argentina. No, none of the players in Europe can play the game.
And we thought that would happen before everything, because when the Brazilian players weren't allowed to come in, and we thought that from La Liga also they wouldn't come, from Ligue 1. And we said, we had some years ago that the Super Classic of America, with only the Brazilian and Argentinian players who play here in South America. But I don't know. I don't know what's going to happen.
Actually,
now.
You know
that
what?
Would be cool. That would be really
that
cool.
would be the best solution.
Yeah.
Have play Maybe. The game again. Have a special, you know, there's more flexibility with the South American League,
Saturday,
especially this time of year, right? Just simply play it with players in Brazil and players in Argentina.
Yeah.
I'm going to hazard a guess that Brazil would be heavily favored
if
you
so
did
too.
That.
But, you know.
Okay, so that's not going to happen, we assume, although maybe that, I think that.
Yeah,
I think
Carlos Tevez is available. Carlos Tevez can play for Argentina.
Go.
Yeah.
So FIFA is going to have to make a decision on this. They're going to have to apportion blame. If we have to go with levels of blame here, I think the Argentine FA, based on what you told us as well, not so much for the false documents, for me at least. I'm not looking at... Okay, Gustavo, you don't know this, but I hate 99% of lawyers, and I generally don't like the law, okay? Just to be very clear. But, so based on the... So the first thing about not filling out the forms correctly, I think that's a bit stupid. It's a crime. But the second thing, once they're there with CONMEBOL, with the Brazilian FA, and they're saying, hey, we obviously all screwed up. If you just leave these four guys in the hotel and don't put them in your starting lineup, this game can be played. That is where the Argentine FA moves over into fault, for me. Seriously. Brazilian FA, of course, they're responsible because they could have done more to go and check and give the information and so on. I'm wondering if the best solution isn't just to punish both and just give them 0 points.
Yeah, I think that's what's
for this
most
game.
Likely to happen.
They'll still qualify. But I still prefer the idea of playing Brazil versus Argentina. Gustavo, just to give us a sense, has there been a general reaction from the media? Because we were hearing as well, I saw Bolsonaro's son was tweeting about it. What is the general sense? Because from the outside, there's also an element viewed in Europe where we look at this, oh, crazy South American football again. CONMEBOL, a shambles, blah, blah, blah. Oh, is there a sense of embarrassment as well, maybe?
Yes. It's an embarrassment. It's a shame. It's a shame for everybody. And as a Brazilian, I feel shame. Because the way that it happened, you know, as I'm telling you guys, it could be prevented. It could be prevented on Saturday. That's the main thing for me. You could prevent it on Saturday. You know, we see here in Brazil, the federal police make crazy stuff, you know, to reach person, to take some guys in the political area here in Brazil, and they can't stop the four Argentinian players to go out of the hotel and play one match. That's crazy. That's crazy for me. That's crazy. You know, as you told, Gab, you have, firstly, the four Argentinian players that lied. That's the Anvisa version. That's important because AFA says that everything was made correct. So I think that Anvisa should publish the document that they feel wrong. That's important.
Yeah.
But then you have the fault of Argentina FA, but you have this many decisions that were made, that were taken, and they were trying to know here in Brazil, I'm gonna use a Portuguese term that they say jeitinho brasileiro. That's the Brazilian way to make things go right in the wrong way. That's
tranquilo.
Like
right?
I love it, man.
Yeah, that's something like that. And it was made because here in Brazil we have you two guys are football guys. The rivalry between Brazil and Argentina is huge. It's huge. So when everything began, the first impression is the Argentinians are trying to make the Brazilians as clowns. They don't who do they think they are? They can't come here in Brazil and make anything they want. But then when that show in the Arena Corinthians happened, people here said, oh, okay, the majority of people, okay, Argentina is wrong. It's clearly wrong because they couldn't lie in the demission here in the country. But couldn't Anvisa reach the players before the match?
Yeah.
Did they have to stop the football match for the whole world? That's the problem.
I just two final things for me, Joseph, if you want to weigh in. One is, has the government said anything? Has somebody more important than Bolsonaro's son, has Bolsonaro said anything? Is there any indication?
No, nothing. Okay. Absolutely nothing.
And the other thing, just for me, covering Brazil at the Copa America and at the World Cup, I have to say, Chichi is one of my favorite people in the world. I like the way he talks. I like the way he expresses himself. I like his football. I just want to give a big applause to him. I don't know if it was his idea or somebody else's idea, but just to go and have the kickabout, the training session here in the UK, they kept showing it.
Yeah,
you know, the little goals. And
semi-finals.
I just thought that was so cool. That was the right footballing response from the players, from the Brazilian national team, from the Brazilian FA. I'm hoping he's received a lot of love because of that in Brazil too.
Yeah, Tite is a lovely guy. He's a lovely guy. I also covered Brazilian national team from 2016 to 2019, the World Cup qualifiers and the Copa America. Now I'm working with Argentina. But he's a lovely guy. He's a very special guy. He's the best Brazilian head coach, no doubt about it. And one little info also, yesterday I was talking, because I was right behind the Everton's goal in the I would say first half, no, the 4 minutes of match. So I was right behind Everton's goal. But a person from CBF who worked with Titi told me that when he saw the guy from Anvisa arriving, he screamed, "No, leave it, let the guys play, let the guys play."
You know, lovely.
What a match.
I think all we can safely say is, South American football, Brazilian fans, Argentina fans, they deserve a lot better in this. Definitely. I hope that there are lessons that we can all learn here. Yeah. Gustavo, thank you so much.
Thank you. It was a huge pleasure. I'm always listening to you, so it's a huge pleasure for me.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launcher online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit $1 million stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify is your no excuses business partner. Sell without needing to code or design. Just bring your best ideas and Shopify will help you open up shop. What I love about Shopify is how no matter how big you want to grow, Shopify gives you everything you need to take control and take your business to the next level. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/gabjules, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/gabjules now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/gabjules. All right, enough CONMEBOL. How about some quick hits instead?
Let's go, Gab.
The champions of the world, La France, draw 1-1 with Ukraine thanks to a late equalizer from Anthony Martial. Jules, 5 games now without a win.
I don't know what's going on, Gab. It's not just you can draw 5 times in a row, and you know, for different reasons. But the fact that they play so badly
that first half
was appalling. But it was the same against Bosnia. The game was so poor. They played so badly. And at least that day, Kylian Mbappe started and Benzema started. But yet they were poor.
And Pogba,
they drew. And then they were poor again against Ukraine that first half. And, okay, the style is not there. But you could still find a way of winning, right?
The style's never been there with Deschamps.
Yeah, but at least
I think
winning.
We can safely say this, yeah?
Well, he had a style that was not our taste, but it was still efficient. It was very solid. No, it was. It was often on the counter. It was quick transition forward. But even that has gone. I would not mind so much if that was still there and that was you finding a way like this to win. But the most worrying for me, Gab, is that Deschamps is getting everything wrong. Every team selection, almost every substitution, everything is wrong. How many times did he get the wrong system, like the 4-3-3 against Ukraine? I could have told you from the beginning, don't go 4-3-3, please. Just go 4-4-2. That would trouble them. Here you go, 4-3-3, they're terrible. What does he do at halftime? He changed. Yeah, the Euros against Switzerland, the back three, wrong idea. What did he do at halftime? It changed. Against Bosnia, wrong idea from the beginning. What did he do at halftime? It changed. But this is no way. You don't play football 45 minutes.
Does he get a couple extra credit points? Because we criticize him. I criticize him. I was saying, why are you playing four central defenders, right, when you play Luka Hernandez and Pavard? Here, we had Dubois and Dean, right? Mm-hmm. They're not obviously Theo for whatever reason. Yeah. Those guys are real proper fullbacks, yeah. Right? Yeah. Didn't work either, did it?
Didn't work either. They never got the ball. I mean, Dubois at some point even told off Paul Pogba saying, hey, four times I've made the run, the ball never arrived. It was crazy. And I never thought I would say, Gab, but Tuesday night, they play against Finland. Huge game, because if they lose that, they might not even finish top and go
losing
to the World Cup.
Against Finland. Come on, Jari Litmanen's not coming back.
Yeah, we all saw the video of Adrian Rabiot's mum, Veronique, having an argument with Kylian Mbappé's dad and Paul Pogba's family at the Euros. But now Rabiot says that it was all blown out of proportion and that everything is fine and he's happy to be there.
So this is the funny thing about this, right? I gotta love Rabiot because really he's a big kid, right? He says, my mum told me it was all blown out of proportion.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? So he wasn't actually there, right? So... I'm serious. Hey, look, we all love our moms, but
yeah,
come on, man.
Yeah,
like, move on. Don't just say, like, all you had to do was, and obviously they don't have anybody advising them PR-wise.
Nope.
All you got to say is, oh, I got no problem at all with Killian and Paul. Yep. We're buddies. We're all my boys. Great to be with the national team. Move on.
Yeah,
that's it.
Exactly.
Right? That's
exactly.
All you got to do.
That's what I said.
Germany stomp all over Armenia 6-0. Jules, are you impressed with our pal Hansi?
So second game, I mean, much better than the first one when they won 2-0, but that was against Liechtenstein, but that was not very convincing. This was much better. Armenia were unbeaten going into that game in those qualifiers and top of the group as well. And Germany blew them away. I think you still need to see a bit more, but back three, which... I guess his old pal Joachim Löw did before.
We're seeing some new guys, Hoffman, the guy from Salzburg who
Karim
came on.
Karim Adeyemi, who scored for his first cap, his first goal, 19-year-old, great talent. So yeah, you see a few more players and even Timo Werner scored.
Stop
so
it. I knew that was
even
coming.
Timo
I
Werner, so
coming.
They must have done
I knew
something.
That was coming.
And it's not just the world champions who can't win anymore, Gab. It's the European champions too, Italy. Are held to a 0-0 draw by Switzerland a few days after drawing with Bulgaria already.
Yeah.
You're nervous. Are you nervous?
Technically drew in the European Championships final. Yeah. Technically drew against Spain in the semifinals. I will forever be scarred by what happened the last time Italy failed to qualify for the World Cup when they're in group with Spain. Because, you know, you have to win. You don't want to be in a position where you have to win your head-to-heads. And that's where they are. Mm. They're clear at Switzerland. Switzerland have a game in hand. What this means is, you know, Italy find themselves in a situation where to control their own destiny, they have to basically beat Switzerland at home. Which,
November.
In this game, again, they wasted. They dominated. I thought they dominated the game.
They did. Yeah, Berardi had a big chance.
They created chances. Berardi had one. Insigne had a decent chance. Great save by Sommer. And of course, Jorginho missed the penalty. But that's kind of papering over cracks a little bit. Ciro Immobile were really poor in this game.
Yeah.
I feel like there's several other levels to go to. And my one thing with Mancini is, does he do better when he's managing at a tournament where he's got the guys every single day, as opposed to coming in and out?
Yeah.
That is my question.
Yeah, but they beat the records.
They beat the record, 36 games unbeaten.
Wow. It is pretty impressive, even if, you know.
Yes,
it's
knocking
all
Brazil and Spain off their perch. How about that?
Wow.
England's B team win 4-0 against Andorra. Jules, you impressed?
I mean, I want the Nations League back. I don't want those games anymore. I don't want the England-Andorra game with a B team or a C team against Andorra who spend the game defending. I don't think it's fun. I don't think England played well. I'm not sure they had to anyway because they still weren't playing badly or averagely.
They're 1-0 up. There's half an hour to go, and he sends on the big boys, Kane and Grealish and Mount. That's the one thing which I thought wasn't great. I thought you're playing Andorra. Patterns of play, you know they're going to sit deep. This is a great opportunity for you to learn something that you're objectively not very good at, which is actually creating chances in a half court. They didn't do that.
No,
that's my concern with this.
But, yeah. It'd be interesting to see against Poland. Yeah. Poland is the big game as well. That's why he changed so many players. But I just don't think you can learn much from that kind
Trent in midfield, you like that?
Yeah, I like that. I like Reece James as well. I thought that was very interesting towards the end. This was last week, but it's still worth talking about, Gab, because England won away to Hungary. But again, their players were subjected to racial abuse, like the French players were against Hungary in Hungary as well during the Euros. And Gab, they were already punished after that game against France at the Euros. So tell me why there were 60,000 people in that Puskas Arena.
So for the same reason that if you get suspended in a Premier League or a Liga match, you don't serve that suspension in the Champions League. It's a different competition. That would be the argument, right? So this is European qualifiers. They're run by UEFA, but it's a FIFA competition, so FIFA handles the disciplinary side of things. So, and I'm sure that they're going to get a ban there. So that it was going to be a long time before they play before their own fans. I can see that argument. I think in the case of crowd behavior as opposed to players, I think bans should apply across all competitions, the way they do with doping. It just seems like common sense.
That was crazy.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Gab. Just go to Indeed.com/Gab right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/Gab. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. Right, let's do some more quick hits because the last ones were so much fun. Spain beat Georgia 4-0 and our boy Ferran Torres scores again. Jules, they needed this.
Yeah, badly after the defeat against Sweden 3 or 4 days before. Good win. I mean, Georgia were really poor, to be fair. But it's good. It's good for Ferran Torres to score again. Soler score again as well, which is important. And like Luis Enrique said, they really badly needed that to at least, even if Sweden have two games in hand, I think it would be good for them to going forward. Belgium also win 3-0 against the Czech Republic. And Eden Hazard shines. Gab, it's good news for Real Madrid fans.
Yeah, if he can bottle this and play it again. He had a couple moves. He had one where he set up somebody's goal. I forget who, with a little shimmy and stuff. Yeah. He looks good. He looked fit. Now he needs to do it in a Real Madrid shirt. The last time around, he didn't do it. In other words, on Belgium, this is... 3-0 is one of the most misleading score lines you're going to see. Czech Republic had a lot
two
of chances.
Huge chances.
And some more.
By Courtois.
Yeah, terrible defending from Belgium. This is something that he needs. I don't know if he just can't do it, doesn't have a play-by. I have an idea. But something, St. Courtois always helps. Mm. Holland defeat Montenegro 4-0 as Memphis Depay bags two goals. Jules, he's on fire. And this is actually a very big win given the standings in this group. I actually thought this Holland were the likeliest to screw the pooch here.
Yeah. Holland with Norway and Turkey in that group.
It's a tough, tough group.
Well. It's a really tough group.
And they're not out of it yet.
No. And really, when you watch them play, and Louis van Gaal has come back for like a third time at 120 years old, it's not going to be easy. But the one that can really do it for them and qualify them is Memphis. Almost on his own. Wijnaldum had a good game too, but I thought Memphis was fantastic, like he's been for Barcelona. He's been carrying Barcelona this season and already carrying the Netherlands as well. I mean, there might be a point where he just can't do it on his own anymore. Arsene Wenger, who, by the way, you will speak to very soon, loves the idea of a World Cup every 2 years. Gab, others, not so much. Is it really a possibility? And what do you make of it?
All right, I mean, like, without getting too far into FIFA politics, Saudi Arabia has asked FIFA to explore the viability of a World Cup every 2 years. Yeah. I'm not talking World Cup for the men. I'll give you my view. For the women, World Cup every 2 years, no-brainer. They should go ahead and they should have done this yesterday. Yeah. Because women's game, completely different setup. You know, less congested calendar. It's important for women to play big fixtures and whatever else. And you draw the interest. Men's game, I don't know. I need to see the project. I need to see more detail. So obviously this is partly about the fact that they say, look, there's a lot of countries who never get to play in a World Cup ever. If we have them more often, probability-wise, they'll have more chances. So that's what they say. Mm-hmm. Obviously also, there's obviously a big issue of money as well.
Yeah.
If it's going to be a 48-team tournament every 2 years, I think it gets a little bit difficult, and I think you risk cannibalizing some of the exposure. If it is something like, say, Global Nations League, make the Nations League more relevant. Maybe you find a way to so teams can qualify for this, and maybe you play a shorter form tournament and clear yourself the World Nations League champion.
I'm still not sure.
I'm more open to it, but I need to see more details. Mm. Jules, you were away last time, so I need your thoughts on the Saul Griezmann, Luke de Jong dance. And, of course, Camavinga to Real Madrid. In fact, tell me this. You compared him to Clarence Seedorf. Yeah. Robbo compared him to Jeffrey Kondogbia.
What?
Jeffrey Kondogbia. He did say Jeffrey Kondogbia at 18 when we thought he was going to be really good.
Okay, but still, Camavinga is much better. I mean, come on. Geoffrey Kondogbia. No offense, Geoffrey, but I think Camavinga is fantastic. I said Seedorf because I just think he can do everything. And yes, he's only 18 and he will be a bit inconsistent at the beginning.
It's a great piece of business.
It's fantastic.
In 1 year left, but still, great piece of business.
30 million. He's worth easily double, if not more than that. So well done, Real Madrid. He's very excited, very happy. He could have gone to PSG, could have gone to an English club, but Real Madrid, he knows he will have a bit of time that they won't put him under pressure straight away in the starting 11 and ask him to deliver. Yeah. So it's good. He's going to learn from Casemiro and Kroos and Modric and Valverde, all of that. I think it's perfect for him.
And the three-way dance?
Wow, this blew our mind. We were doing the FC show on the Tuesday night. Ridiculous. I think it's a good thing for Griezmann to go back to Atleti because it was not working out for him at Barcelona. But why would you just loan him like this and get nothing in return apart from an option to buy is beyond me.
They don't have any money.
I know, but Saul to Chelsea, great piece of business from Chelsea.
Come on, can we praise Barcelona? You get his huge wages off. I mean, we both know.
I know, but come on. Don't tell me that if they had done this 3 weeks ago, they could not have done something in return or in exchange.
Or maybe if they'd done this sooner, they might have been able to keep Lionel Messi. Who was
exactly.
Good. I think that's the big one. That's a big mystery that Barcelona fans, I think, want answered.
Yeah, and rightly so. They messed up. And then Luke de Jong. Why? Why?
Because you need a center forward.
No, why? This has to stop, those signings.
What?
But Luke de Jong, who can't play for Sevilla, is now in the Barcelona squad.
When you play a team and they put eight players in the six-yard box, you can't just always send your
Okay, who's going to cross the ball?
What?
Who's going to cross the ball for de Jong?
Then Jordi Alba.
Right, okay, maybe. That's the only one really got crossed. And I'm not even sure that's the kind of crosses that he put. I'm not keen, but hey, maybe Ronald is going to prove me wrong. The intermediary Federico Pastorello has denied reports that there is any pre-agreement, let's say, between Antonio Conte and Arsenal in the case of Mikel Arteta being sacked. Does that make sense to you? And do you believe him, first of all?
So, first of all, I don't know what the hell a pre-agreement is. I know what a pre-contract is when a player's going out of contract. Antonio Conte is unemployed, doesn't need a pre-agreement. There's no doubt in my mind that Conte has been offered to Arsenal. He's very keen to come back, and obviously he loves the Premier League, and he's won the Premier League before. Equally, my understanding is that Arsenal aren't going to make any moves until the next two games, Norwich and Burnley, and that's where Arteta's future is going to be decided.
Yeah.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
The U.S. men's national team and Canada draw 1-1, but Weston McKennie doesn't play after breaking COVID protocol. Mm. Jules, it's not the first time this has happened with McKennie. Greg Berhalter's crew winless so far after two games, and they haven't played Mexico yet.
No, you're right, and we thought the win in the Gold Cup, even if it was like a kind of a B team, would bring that momentum and the dynamic, the positive dynamic forward. And yet they struggled in the game where they had a lot of the ball and, you know, a lot of possession, got caught once or twice. Canada had two good chances. And for McKennie, listen, you know already that even at club level, there's a lot of questions over your attitude and your behavior. Why would you go in with the national team and break that protocol again when you've done it before?
What was mysterious here is, and I've spoken to you about it, right? They say he's intelligent.
Of course he
is. He gets things straight away. And he's a good... Well, I wouldn't say of course. There's a lot of footballers who are great footballers.
No, but we know
but
he is.
Completely stupid people.
Yeah,
I think
but
of
we
one
know that
guy
he is.
Who might have a Swiss passport and another passport too,
yes.
And live in London.
Yeah,
this guy is intelligent, right? This is what's so frustrating. You need to grow up and not make stupid decisions.
But what do you mean grow up? He's 25 years old now. It's not like if he was 17 and just discovering life.
Peter Pan. I don't know.
I don't get it. So much talent that you're wasting. The Premier League is going to step up the drive to persuade players to get vaccinated. Gab, this is a good idea. They would show videos for every club for the players to encourage them to go and get the vaccine.
Yeah, because as I've discovered, apparently in this country, you can't make it a requirement for a job that you're vaccinated, right? We have people in nursing homes looking after old people who are unvaccinated. Oh, but that's fine. No, but it just is an interesting one, right? In other countries, like in the U.S., are many corporations which say, hey, you want a job here, you need to be vaccinated.
Same in France.
Right? In schools and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Here, apparently, I'm guessing you can't do that. What I would do is, at a minimum, you would have, if you do have close contacts in quarantine and you're not vaccinated, you should have a different process. I think that's what they're doing in the NFL.
Yeah.
I believe in individual choice. I also think your individual choice sometimes ends when, you know, your employer says, well,
exactly,
this is work. This is what you have to do.
Exactly.
You know, whether it means we get to the point where if you're unvaccinated, you have to live in a bubble at the training ground. You know, Spurs have that hotel. I don't know. I hope it doesn't get to that, but I think clubs can be more forceful in what they demand of people, short of forcing them to be vaccinated.
I agree.
Gareth Bale gets a hat trick as Wales beat Belarus 3-2, but they're all grumpy, the Welsh, because this game was played in Kazan, which is far away. More importantly, not in Belarus, which I guess it couldn't be because of the sanctions against Belarus.
Yeah, it is.
But equally, they had players who had trouble sorting out their visas.
It was crazy. Organization. I mean, why Kazan? Who picked Kazan? What, the Belarus FA?
Well, Belarus doesn't have many. I don't want to get geopolitical. Belarus doesn't have many friends, but its only real friend is the big brother to the east.
I guess so.
I guess they could have played in St. Petersburg or Moscow. Would have been a little bit easier.
Yeah.
Right?
So, I mean, it looks to me like Belarus said, okay, what could be the most pain in the butt for Wales to go to and give us a bit more chance to win? Hey, let's bring them to Kazan.
Well, they could have played in Novosibirsk or Petropavlovsk, Kamchatka.
Listen, in the end, Bale saved the day for Wales. It was fantastic. Hat-trick, two pence, but the winning goal in the last few minutes of the game.
Kind of scuffed as well. But,
Right place, right time. Still, it's a big win for them, considering the standings in their group. So, well done. And a bit like for Eden Hazard, let's hope that he can bring that form to
if you're a Real Madrid, fan, you're turning into a Real Madrid fan.
I mean, exactly. Mohamed Salah is in the final 2 years of his Liverpool contract, as you would know, because we keep repeating it enough. And according to reports, he's seeking a pay rise, and a big one, Gab. At least twice as what Virgil van Dijk, the club's highest earner, earns. Should fans be concerned in the sense that the club might not want to give Salah that kind of contract?
These are the things that would concern me if I'm Liverpool. And by the way, I tweeted out, and I might even reference it in my column, a thread by my god, my financial, my football finance god, explaining why Liverpool aren't spending as much as other clubs, why they have less money. That is a structural issue. Go read it. It's not boring. If you like football, this is part of football.
Yeah, of course, to understand.
My concern, and I flagged this up years ago, right, when Mark Ogden and I did our Liverpool Keeper Dump series, we pointed out Salah, Firmino,
Mane,
Van Dijk, Henderson. You got a bunch of players who are all roughly the same age, all in big contracts. Once you get to a certain point, you can't sell them, right? With hindsight, it almost felt as if maybe they should have made this decision a few years ago. Now they're stuck. They're stuck with Salah, and I think you hold the line. And you know what? And I think I don't like extending contracts, giving big contracts to people into their 30s. You know that. I always give Arsenal a hard time out. I have to be consistent. I'm going to give them a hard time here. You want £500,000 or even £350,000, Mo, go find it somewhere else. In the meantime, you have a contract, and let's see when you're 31 years old if somebody can do better than what we can offer you here at Liverpool. Yeah. Honestly, I it's great to lock people up. It gave Henderson a new deal. I'm not sure I would have done that, but at some point, chickens come home to roost.
You always
and Michael Edwards, of course, leaving the club. Mm-hmm. I wonder how that's going to play into it as well.
Yeah.
Youssoufa Moukoko is Germany's youngest ever under 21 player, making his debut at 16. Jules, is he the guy who will make Dortmund fans ask Erling who when the big Norwegian leaves, presumably next summer?
I'm not sure he's as ready as that for next summer, but certainly the talent is there. He's broken all the records that you can break. He played for the under 18 when he was 14 or something crazy like that. He's clearly prodigious, but there's still a big gap between doing it at all those levels, even the under 21s, and then to the first team. So let's hope that he can develop and takes that time to reach that kind of level. But of course, he's very, very promising. I have a lot of hope in Karim Adeyemi, who plays for RB Salzburg, that you could easily see Dortmund going to get, like they got Haaland, and at 19 he might be more ready to be the successor of Haaland than Moukoko is, even if he's already at
Dortmund. They're still very young.
Yeah, they're both very young. Mario Mandzukic, Gab, we're all a bit sad, and it's a big page that is getting turned. He has announced his retirement from football. Age 35, how will you and us remember him?
I'm going to remember him as kind of the ultimate warrior of a forward. Whether he was coming from wide areas or playing through the middle, you know, this was not just a target man. This is a target man who's always, I thought, super intelligent in his runs, super unselfish. The fact that, you know, he did it for Bayern, he did it for Atletico Madrid, he did it for Juventus. Yeah. Before that, he obviously did it for Wolfsburg. But of course, I think the crowning moment will be with Croatia in the World Cup on that, you know, that tremendous team that came together, crazy, went all the way to the finals, and really a special player. It's interesting when we talk about, you know, 35.
Yes.
I played 10 games for Milan last season in the second half of the season. I'm glad he's making his decision whether to preserve his body or whatever else. You would feel a big man like him, as you know, might be able to continue squeezing out a couple of years.
A couple of years, yeah.
But equally, if he can't play to his level, he doesn't want to hang around. Exactly. So good for him.
And scored one of the greatest goals in the Champions League final.
No question.
As well.
We talked about Javier Pastore last week, and we obviously brought him luck because he found a new team. Roma canceled his contract, and he has signed a one-year deal at Elche. Jules, are you looking forward to seeing him regain his magic?
Him and Pipa Benedetto, the Marseille player who's on loan there, another Argentine too. Let's see what they can do. I think, you know, he hasn't played much, as we've been saying. But maybe the Spanish air, you know, the fact that he plays in La Liga, that is maybe more suited to him than Serie A, I don't know. Maybe it might be better. But it's the kind of players, as we've been saying, that you want to see playing well, even if it's just one more season.
You were secretly hoping he'd come back to Paris Saint-Germain.
Oh, I would have loved that. Even to chaperone Leo, you know. But it's okay. Maybe next year. From one Roma cast-off to another, Steven Nzonzi is a World Cup winner, Gab, and he's only 32 years of age, and yet no one wants him. So will he really have to go to Qatar to continue his career?
Yeah, so Nzonzi was part of that Roma cohort of a million players that were training by themselves as they're trying to move on. They don't fit into Mourinho's plans. He is a prisoner of the big contract.
Big wages.
You know, much as the whole world of football loves and respects and admires Monchi, and we automatically say, greatest director of football in the world, and it rolls off the tongue. You know, Monchi's always in the conversation. Yeah. Sometimes, even the great ones really, really screw things up. And they really screwed it up. This is a terrible contract they gave Nzonzi.
Yeah.
I don't know if he's lost his motivation. Well, what about when France saying? Like,
I know, he did okay at Rennes. And then they just could not. I think financially, he was costing them too much. And they only played the Europa Conference League. So they said, we can't afford you, go back to Roma.
He's not offering to take
even
a pay
here in the Championship, don't you think like he could do a good job somewhere in the Championship, or even like second half of the table in the Premier League?
When you're 6'10" and you can pass the ball and you have legs that are, you know, is as long as a building is high, you would think you could make a living.
Big time.
Some people don't like VAR. Chelsea women's coach Emma Hayes obviously does, because she says it makes the absence of VAR makes women's footballers feel like second-class citizens.
Yeah, and you can understand her point of view. There was a big game against Arsenal for the opening of the WSL on Sunday, and I think she's right to think that this is the kind of game that you need VAR for. If there are decisions that...
Because Arsenal's winner was clearly offside.
Well...
And Beth Mead nevertheless celebrated.
Yes.
Knowing she was offside.
No, and it was a 3-2 win. I mean, I don't know what would have happened. That goal made it 3-1. But you're right. I don't know what the WSL doesn't have.
Because VAR costs money.
No,
and because
I know
women's football's losing money. And that would be the reason. You know my thoughts on VAR.
Yeah.
I'm on team VAR and I'm on team Emma. And knowing that team Emma is also on team VAR, I got no problem with it.
No,
I think
me
at the highest level... It might be an investment worth making. But when you have people continuously say, oh, not for me, I don't like VAR, robs of spontaneity. This is an important, respected voice across all football, men's and women's, saying that VAR is important.
Yeah.
She's not just saying this because she lost this game.
No. By the way, great win for Arsenal women's. They were fantastic, even if that goal is obviously very limited. Brazil-Argentina wasn't the only qualifier to be cancelled on Sunday. Guinea v. Morocco was also called off, Gab, but for more serious reasons.
There was a coup d'etat. And look, in these situations, all you just hope for is the safety of the players, the Moroccan player, the Guinean players. Not just the safety of players, the safety of anybody who's living in Conakry, I think,
Conakry,
is the capital.
Yeah, capital.
And you hope that everything's fine. I mean, it must have been scary. You know, they're in their hotel, they're hearing gunshots, they're told not to go outside. Obviously, football becomes less important in this context.
Definitely.
And you just pray that everybody's staying safe.
Mm.
Franck Ribéry has found himself a new home. He signs for Salernitana in Serie A. Jules, he's 38. He's going to be 39 in the spring.
Yeah.
But he made 30 appearances for Fiorentina last year. He's fit. He's a specimen.
Yeah, he stayed fit in the summer as well. He posted a lot of videos on Instagram of him and Jerome Boateng with their personal trainer, training and everything. Listen, I love this, right? I love this. And he wanted to stay in Italy because he could have gone, I think, to Hertha Berlin, to Lyon. There was a few clubs interested, to Qatar and all of that. I love this. But now people are telling me, he still wants to enjoy his football, have fun. With Castori as a manager, Salernitana, I'm not sure he's watched them play before, but hey,
him and Simi up front,
you don't know, but I really hope you enjoy your football, Frankie, because I'm not too convinced by the style of play of your new team. El Mundo has revealed details of Neymar's salary, confirming what many of us in France had reported. When he moved to PSG in 2017 for a world record deal, he signed for 43.3 million euros a year. That's around £710,000 a week, which is about twice what Kevin De Bruyne makes basically in the Premier League.
As the highest paid player in the Premier League, well, until Cristiano did. I think this is important because people always get, you know about my obsession with like media copying media in other countries, not understanding net salaries versus gross salaries and whatever else. But what I find interesting is just how much these top players make for top teams on the continent relative to over here. And that's why when people talk about how much is Cristiano going to make, how much of a pay cut is he taking, I've seen reports, oh, look, he's going to make an eye-watering, which is a stupid term. Please don't ever write the word eye-watering, right?
Eye-watering,
£500,000 a week. Look, I can say £500,000 a week. My eyes aren't watering. Well, I don't have this weird dysfunction. Look, £500,000. Like if you say £1 billion a week, my eyes still aren't
crying.
Watering.
Yeah.
Anyway, I just wonder how much of a pay cut is he actually going to take? It's an interesting business model. You can say Neymar's worth it or whatever. But now that we have confirmations, he published his contract, it's not just Messi with the big bucks and Cristiano. It's this guy too. Right, that brings us to an end. But I think you should come back on Thursday.
I will be, but you won't be there.
I will not be here. I am away. I'll be in Switzerland. But don't worry, I'll be back on Monday. Until then. Love the game. Love your neighbor. Love yourself.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.